Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
George Sedano is a man of many talents.
Catch him on ESPN Radio. Covers the NBA around the horn. On Twitter at Sedano joins us. Now, George, what's going on, man? Appreciate the time.
Hey, guys, how are you? Good to be here. Just here in Dallas, getting ready for the game tonight between the Warriors and the Mavs. I'll be on the sidelines for ESPN Radio. It's what I switched on to after the second round. I've been doing the Western Conference Finals, so I'm excited to see what happens tonight.
Love it. All right, before we get to that and the sweep opportunity for Golden State, and obviously the Heat-Celtics series, put you on the spot a little bit. If the Grizzlies were a startup company stock, which would they be? I mean, are we talking Amazon in 99? Like, what kind of stock are we dealing with the Memphis Grizzlies right now?
It's funny that you use that reference, because I think I used that same reference like 2 years ago with Gary Parrish on this station. And I didn't have a particular stock in mind at that time, but I did feel that they were a growth stock that I was buying a lot of. I think that, you know, the basketball equivalent I made was, I think they can be the next generation, or this generation's Spurs, right? I think they have that kind of infrastructure, from the front office to the coaching staff to the way they're selecting players, the type of players that they know fit with what they want to do. It feels like they had a real plan, very much like the Spurs did. So I guess if I was picking a stock, maybe, that's a great question. I'd say like maybe Apple or some sort of tech stock for sure. I don't know about Amazon, because, you know, Amazon, we're talking about like the kings of the kings, right? Like that, Amazon would be more like, you know, the Lakers or the Celtics, you know, if you're looking at it historically. I don't know if I'd go that far. But I'd say, you know, Apple or you know, something like that in that realm.
But look, Apple's something you want to have in your portfolio at all times, basically. You know, that can win the Wall Street equivalent of a title someday, right? I mean, they can do that.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I've been ridiculed recently, even during their run this year, where I've been so pro-Memphis that people think I'm nuts. Like, I've said this, and you can find it on my Twitter. I said, they're going to win a championship. They're this generation Spurs. Like, they're going to win while Ja is there. And people think I'm nuts. But I'm telling you, I feel fairly confident that as long as they maintain relative health, and they continue to build this roster, and those guys continue to grow within their own, you know, skill sets, I think that they're going to win a championship there. You guys are going to have a parade for sure at some point, in my estimation.
Man, we're hoping so. So when, timeline-wise, when's that fair to start expecting it, right? Because we know that the window's already started, because when you got a Ja Morant, you want to capitalize, right? And you know you do. But we know there's a process to it, too. So, and you talk about Ja being 22, Jaren Jackson, your other most important piece, probably, along with Desmond Bane. He's 22 years old. So when does that sense of urgency, okay, they got to win now? Because we know next year, too, you're talking about the Clippers having Kawhi back, right? So even, you know, penciling them as a top four seed doesn't feel necessarily fair, although that may be the expectation. So when should they win one by? George, when does the fun stop and the expectations start?
I mean, I think that the window starts this year, right? So I would say that I like to look at long-time horizons, so yep. I would say the next 5 years, right?
Fair. Yep.
I think that within the next 5 years, they can win a championship because, you know, Josh, you mentioned, is 22. I believe players kind of start to hit the peak of their powers in that 26 to 27 range. Mm-hmm. So I believe that that kind of vibes with that particular timeline, where I think that within, you know, year four or five, if the championship hasn't come, you know, maybe you extend it out one more year, 28, right? Like, I think if you can hit in that sweet spot between like 25 and 28 with Ja, then I think that you are right on target. And if you look at it historically, whether it was LeBron, whether it was Giannis, whether it was, I mean, Kobe obviously won very young, but Jordan, like all the all-time greats, and I know that sounds crazy to put Ja in that particular category, but I think that he's going to be one of the all-timers. Like, I feel that already. I think there are certain guys you can tell right away if they're going to be all-timers, and I think he's going to be in that category. There's a guy, Luka, in this series that I'm covering that's in that category already. And we know a bunch of the Warriors guys, particularly Steph, is in that category. So I just think he's going to be in that category. So, and again, I trust their plan. Like, I just believe in the organization from top to bottom. So I think that's the window, 5-6 years max.
In terms of this game tonight, you know, look, I wanted to believe in Dallas. You had the 19-point lead in game two. You know, you're coming back home in game three for a chance to at least get one here. You're down 3-0. Psychologically, do you see a team in Dallas that wants to take this game in this series back to San Francisco?
Yes, I do believe that. They feel fairly confident that despite all the different defenses they've thrown at Luka, and Andrew Wiggins has done a phenomenal job of at least making him work hard, right? The stat that I saw that was fantastic in regards to that is when Wiggins picks him up beyond half court, the ball doesn't even get out of Luka's hands until at least 9 seconds are off the shot clock, which means you're not even starting your offensive set till there's 15 seconds on the clock, like, which is crazy. So they've done a nice job. But, you know, Jason Kidd tells me that they feel like those zone defenses and the box and one have created a ton of open looks. They just haven't knocked them down. And to his credit, they have been really bad at uncontested shots in this series. So I think that in theory, it should tilt in their favor eventually, and role players should play better at home historically. But, you know, you run out of time. You know, sometimes the math doesn't work exactly the way we want it to work, if, you know, especially if you're Dallas in this situation. So, you know, they're going to need a big-time effort, not only from Luka, but Jalen Brunson, who's played fairly well in this series, and Spencer Dinwiddie finally had a good game, I thought, in this series in game three. But the guy that really has been hurting them, I mean, Bullock was pretty bad in the last game, although he had been decent in Golden State. But Maxi Kleba, to me, when they go five out, he's been kind of the key, right? Like, he's a good defender, and they don't lose a ton when Powell goes to the bench defensively when Kleba's in there, but he adds that element of the outside shot. And Kleba's shooting in losses, which they have three of in this series, you know, about 35%. Like, you can't have that. Like, he even looks scared at times to take shots. So, you know, for them to be able to beat Golden State, they're going to have to knock down those open looks.
What has what Kidd's done this year with this Dallas team, the way they've played defense, in terms of what you think of him as a head coach and where he might rank on a list you're putting together of the, you know, the better head coaches in the league? Has Jason pushed himself up the list for you? Was he already, I got to imagine it's improved from where you had him certainly before you took this job. Just your thoughts on Jason Kidd, the job he's done, and where he would rank after this. You know, so it's only been 1 year. You'd like to certainly see more, but where you've got him right now in terms of a NBA head coach.
Well, first of all, he has absolutely climbed. There's no question about that. And, you know, when I've talked to Jason, you know, I got to know him a little bit when he was an assistant in L.A. Mm-hmm. And he credits Frank Vogel a ton of just kind of letting him understand what it actually entails to be a head coach, right? Remember, he jumped into this thing with Milwaukee, and he felt like, and a lot of young coaches do this, right, or first-time coaches do this, that he needed to kind of do everything, right? Mm-hmm. And he needed to be the guy involved in everything. And what you learn over time, and then obviously the Brooklyn situation was a mess too, but what you learn over time is that you delegate. You delegate responsibilities, you trust in your staff, and, you know, you're a CEO, you know what I mean? And it's not to say that you can't be hands-on at times, because he is. But it's not all on you.
Yes.
And what Frank was great at, and he learned from him as well, is not only delegating responsibility to your coaches, but also being as clear with your players as possible. Where Frank, for example, and this was the same thing when he was in Indiana as well, Frank would basically give players a pretty good idea of what their minutes were going to be from a night-to-night basis. And for the most part, players really appreciate that because they have an understanding of what they're going into on a given night. And Jason learned that from Frank as well. So I think that his time with the Lakers, particularly under Vogel, really helped him. And look, having a good staff has helped him too. Sean Sweeney, to me, their defensive coordinator, for lack of a better phrase, is a guy who's going to get a head coaching job. Mm-hmm. Jared Dudley, who's on his staff as well, is a former player. He was basically a coach in the locker room, as a player with the Lakers when he was there. And that's why he brought him on this staff. He's going to eventually be a head coach in this league too. So he surrounded himself with guys that he can trust, and he's allowing them to do the job. So I think he's, look, I mean, this stuff can fluctuate from time to time, and you're kind of putting me on the spot. I mean, I think he's definitely in the upper half. Could he be in the upper third? Yeah, sure. But I still think he still has a ways to go in comparison to the elite guys, right? Like, and by the way, that's only normal because to me, those first few experiences, they don't even count, to me. Like, this is where it really starts for him, in my estimation.
We're talking to George Dono here, Warriors Mavs tonight, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. What do you make of the Warriors? Because they will have moments, right, where they don't look like themselves. And then they will have moments where it's like they just throw it all the way back to 2016 when they were at the peak of their powers and everybody was healthy and everybody was awesome. And we saw that, obviously there in game two, and they come into Dallas in game three, handle business, but they can turn the ball over. It's just, sometimes you don't really know what version of Golden State you're getting. What do you make of them sort of in relation to winning a championship, in these playoffs?
Look, I think that they're arguably the most complete team when you think about it. And yeah, I think that at times they look vulnerable, but I would make the case that every team in this postseason has looked vulnerable at times. And, I just think ultimately the combination of the three core guys in Steph, Draymond, and Klay, and the guys that they have added to the roster, particularly some of the younger guys who have had bigger roles in this particular run than maybe the previous runs or weren't even around in the other runs. Like, I'll give you an example. Kevon Looney was around in that last run towards the end of it, but, he was a bit player. You know what I mean? Like, he was not. I mean, even a role player is probably giving him a little too much credit because, he played a lot of minutes in some cases, he wasn't really part of the game plan. Whereas you saw in game two, Kevon Looney played a huge role in this team going up 2-0 after they left San Francisco because Draymond Green went down with 5 fouls with about 6 minutes to go in the third quarter, and Kevon Looney went nuts in that third quarter. He had 11 points. The Mavs were 0-6 with him as the primary defender. He was causing turnovers. He ended up with 21 points and I believe 11 boards. He had never scored 20 points in a game in the NBA. He hadn't scored 20 points since he was a freshman at UCLA. So that just goes to show you their player development. And another guy in Jordan Poole, right? Perfect example. Jordan Poole in game two closed them out. He helped seal the deal. He had 23 points in that game, 12 of them in the fourth quarter. So Looney helped them in the third. Poole helped them in the fourth. And they've just got a rotation of guys that they know they can count on. On top of the fact, and he's doubtful for tonight and probably won't play, a guy like Otto Porter, right, who they got for the minimum, who's played big minutes for them. So they've just done a really good job of supplementing the roster to help those three guys, both with young players and experienced players alike.
Okay, George, is Miami going to be healthy enough to pull this off? I know they're capable, but I watched them last night, and it just, Jimmy in the knee. I mean, last night he did not look like himself. I know sometimes he's saving, so I'm not going to count him out. He'll probably have 40 next game. But, they obviously didn't have Tyler Hero. That showed up last night as well. Do they have enough left in the tank to take this thing, whatever it's going to be, 7, to still win the series? I'll put it that way. What do you think, George?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough. Like, I picked them originally in 7. But that wasn't factoring in any of these injuries.
Yep.
And
right.
with Jimmy, he's missed a lot of time throughout the season with this knee injury. He missed some time in the playoffs already in this with this injury. But in the playoffs previously, in the Atlanta series, remember, there was the first round. So there's so many days between games. Mm-hmm. It's not like right now where you're playing every other day. So I'm curious to see how he bounces back from that. They certainly did a fantastic job on Bam yep. in game three. They completely changed the way they were defending him. And with Hero, he's been a net negative on the floor in this series, but considering how much they've struggled in the half court,
yep.
And that's been an issue with them most of the season, they're going to need him to be available and be as close to 100% as possible. Now, here's the thing. They believe, because they've been able to navigate throughout the entire regular season and postseason with a bunch of injuries, that they have enough. That is kind of the Eric Spoelstra mantra. It's always been. It continues to be. And here's the other thing. They believe they're the better defensive team than Boston, that if they need to play in the mud, they can do that. Mm-hmm. And they've shown that they're capable of it. And they've had big quarters offensively, but defensively they feel like they can take it up another notch. And while Boston was the best team in the regular season on defense, Miami has been the best team in the postseason defensively. So they feel like they can just kind of, you know, make this thing a brawl and win it. And honestly, I can't doubt them, because every time they're doubted,
right.
they find a way to win again. So, and that's happened in the Philly series. It happened because everyone thought that thing was over when Philly tied that thing up. And in this series, it already happened after game two. So, and it's happening now as we speak. So I'm not doubting them. If they lose, there's, you know, look, man, we know that, to your point, they were capable, but they just may have fallen apart at right. the wrong time physically. So it's going to be fascinating, though, to see the adjustments that Spo makes, because, again, I just think he's the best in the business right now. I think he's at the peak of his powers. He, you know, think about it. In that first quarter interview yesterday, he was kind of laughing about the absurdity of them not hitting shots mm-hmm. like for that long. Like, if any other coach does that, people are probably going nuts, but it's because it's Eric, who's a top 15 coach of all time. Because he's been through everything now at this stage of his career, and he's so well-regarded and respected, people are like, yeah, I kind of get why he's kind of almost laughing it off, because there's, you know, what the hell are you supposed to do in that situation? And guys like him and Kerr specifically, to me, they're just always so calm, regardless of it, of whatever's transpiring at a given moment. And I think that helps teams navigate these situations. So we'll see. They may not have enough, but I'm not writing them off.
That's true. What is it, George, about Robert Williams specifically that is frustrating Bam so much? I mean, it's not like he hasn't seen capable big man throughout the regular season. It just feels like, specifically, you think about game one and game two, he certainly struggled. He was awesome in game three when Robert Williams did not play. And then last night, like, the interior, like, he just could not buy one. What is it about Robert Williams specifically that is making life so difficult for Bam?
Well, it's not even just for Bam. It's just in general the way they play him. They've done a really good job of playing him, for lack of a better phrase, like a free safety off the weak side. So it's not like he has an individual assignment. He's allowed to roam. And, you know, he's 6'9", 6'10", mm-hmm. and the, you know, freak of nature athletically, right? So, because of that, I think that puts them at an advantage. Now, I'm curious to see the adjustment that Spo makes to that now that he's back in the series. Because, you know, these two teams were the two most switchiest teams, for lack of a better phrase, in the NBA. Boston was number one at switching. Miami was number two. And that's what makes Robert so important for them on those switches, is that he can come and kind of roam and kind of protect people as they're driving into the paint. And I think that the counter to that would be is to force a switch and have Williams have to guard a shooter, whether that's Max Strus or Tyler Hero, or if Duncan Robinson plays, right? That way, you're keeping him as far away from the rim as possible and the paint as possible. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's some of the way Miami tries to dictate changing things up with Robert Williams.
Hey, George, man, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate
we'll
the time
tonight.
As always.
Thank you, George.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Yes, sir. He is George Sedano. Catch him tonight right here on 910 FM ESPN.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.